My name is Mike Tanner.
I'm Laird Smith.
And you are currently living real high right now.
Yes, I am. I'm real happy. I just won a hockey conversation with you.
Yeah.
It was great because the structure of the conversation was that you were determined to prove me wrong about something, and in every attempt to do so, you realized that you couldn't. I didn't even have to do any input there. I literally just kind of sat back and let you troll yourself.
Yeah, you actually didn't say much as part of that conversation.
I didn't need to. I put out the initial pause and you were like, no, you're wrong because, no, not that reason. No, not that reason either. It was great.
It's not that I think you're right. It's that I don't have any evidence that you're wrong.
Because I have evidence that I'm right.
You don't have evidence that you're right.
I have absolute evidence
that
I'm right.
So what you said was that basically the posit you were making is that they do not need to play any more games this season.
I guess that.
Prior to the playoffs beginning.
Yeah, announce them. Here we go.
So you believe that currently the eight teams in each conference that are in, those are the teams you go with. And your reasoning is that it doesn't matter who the bad teams are, because they're going to lose anyways.
To be specific, my posit was that the top six teams in each conference have been decided. I don't care about the wild cards, because the strongest teams in each conference are so powerful, they will knock out the wild cards, so it doesn't matter who they are. And let's be fair, you tried to argue that an eighth-seeded team might take out the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Vegas Golden Knights.
I think it is totally possible for an eighth-seeded team to take out the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Vegas Golden Knights.
These potential eighth-seeded teams? Yeah.
Maybe not these particular eighth-seeded teams. I don't remember. See, but here's the thing. For example, Carolina is currently the eighth seed in the East. They're only a few points up on the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Sure.
Columbus Blue Jackets are not having a great year this year.
Probably not.
But last year, they won 20 straight games. They were...
what happens at the map of that?
They were an absolute contender in the playoffs. They barely lost out to the eventual Stanley Cup champion, Pittsburgh Penguins.
I see.
So, I think that if Tampa got Carolina, they'd be pretty happy. I don't think Tampa would be super happy about playing Columbus in the playoffs.
I'm just saying, Blue Jackets do not insulate you against Lightning.
I'm just saying that it's these kind of comments that make it clear that you don't know anything about hockey.
And yet, and this is the important part, I won a hockey conversation, which is why I'm now gloating. And brings us, I think, to what was the intended topic of this podcast.
We were talking, you asked me basically about things that I disagreed with you about, and whether or not I basically could disagree with you about anything and be correct. And you then went on to say specifically disagree with you about things that you like.
Yes.
Because I'm assuming because you admit that things that you don't like are often ridiculous.
No, I just think that you at least have somewhere that you're coming from with that, and that argument tends to involve, but you've never seen it.
Right, and that is the part that drives me most bonkers, because you, I think you would suggest that you're a pretty well-rounded individual.
Well, you know, it's hurtful you say this.
Both physically and psychologically and intellectually. But it drives me crazy that you will say things like, that's not a good movie, and then we will discuss a movie which you have never seen, but you believe based on some kind of weird amalgamation of critical reviews and responses that you just know that something's good or bad. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm real good. I have a second Dan black belt in judging books by their cover.
But I just can't. The thing about that is,
Keep going.
That there has to be things. Have you ever been surprised by something?
Absolutely. Someone jumps out at me from behind a corner, I'm like, huh, I should have judged that book differently.
But have you ever read criticisms of something that led you to believe one thing, watched them, and then disagreed with those criticisms?
Absolutely.
Such as? Can you give me an example?
Thinking. Not off the top of my head. I'll put some more process into it.
So,
don't want to hold up the show.
My thing is that I think that our individual experiences are more important than the common, like, sort of what it, you know, what it is. Have you ever seen the movie Limitless?
No.
But clearly you have an opinion about it.
I do. Having
never seen the film.
Yep.
What is your opinion about the movie Limitless?
Definitely didn't stick the back half. Probably should not have been adapted into a television series, which is, you know, what they decided to do with that. Casting was overall pretty good, but I think that the general direction they went with on the story, where they structured it around the idea that you had to get more of this drug, and yet, despite being a genius, wasn't able to figure out a way to do that and get around the suppliers, that to me just rings completely false.
All right, so...
This is his problem, by the way. I have not seen that movie.
It drives me crazy. Because you're not wrong.
I know.
And you rarely are. But.
He wants me to be wrong.
But the thing about.
You want me to be wrong. You spiritually, you have a need for me to be wrong when I do this.
It's interesting that you bring up the spiritually thing. Because I feel like lately.
Yeah.
You've really amped up your efforts to troll me.
Well, sure, in the last 2 hours.
I really feel... Well, no, not even the last 2 hours. I mean, we had the...
That was fantastic.
Last episode, there were a couple real good burns. There was a couple really good ones last night. I really feel like lately you've decided you're going to step up your efforts to...
I wouldn't characterize them as efforts. I would like to look at them as getting lucky with opportunities that have come my way.
Right.
Yeah.
So, for example, this evening... you asked me to procure something for you.
I did.
On this, one of the holy days of my Lenten fasting.
Yes, indeed. It's today, okay Friday.
Today is a Friday, often known in the Catholic community as Fish Friday, because on Friday during Lent, Catholics do not eat meat.
Some Catholics don't eat
meat. Sure. Catholics... are not supposed to eat meat.
Some Catholics believe they're not supposed to eat meat.
Right, so now I feel like we need a further discussion on this. Do you not believe that Catholic... So how... Why? Am I wrong in that it is a tenet and writing of the church that leads this...
I'm just saying I come from a very large Catholic family that did not observe that tradition.
And that's fair.
Are quite observant Catholics, by and large.
That's interesting to me that that was just one that they were like, nah, I think we're...
And I don't know. I mean, they are Cape Bretoners. It's possible that there was a dearth of fish available to the Cape Bretoners.
That's fair. So, on the...
On an island.
I swear to God. On the... I'm just trying to ignore you now to get back to my point.
Please do.
So... On this particular day, I do not eat meat, as is supposed to be the tradition of some Catholics who live not on islands. And so, but you asked me to procure you something. You asked me to procure you a half dozen chicken nuggets.
Yes, I did. McDonald's. Thank you, by the way.
You're very welcome. What did you then do with those half dozen chicken nuggets?
Well, you see, I went to Wendy's, and I met you outside the front of the apartment here with my bag full of Wendy's.
Yes.
Because I went out and...
Which surprised me a little bit, because you had said, hey, you know, if you could get me...
It surprises me that you thought man can live on half dozen nuggets.
Well, there is that.
Yes.
But I thought he's probably had a few meals, maybe an 11-sies, maybe a whatever.
I have now.
And
let's get back to what's going on.
Let's
I met you outside and came in to explain that, you know, this was a very important day in your religion. As we do. This is a very, very special day because on this day, Mike is not allowed to eat meat. Now, Mike, how much would you say you enjoy meat? Scale of one to give me some right now.
Probably give me some right now, plus four, probably, somewhere in that range.
So I unveiled a spicy chicken sandwich and a bacon deluxe, and I assembled them along with the McNuggets into a super sandwich that I called the McBlasphemy. Yeah. Not only because I was combining the fast food of two competing chains, but also because, as a lapsed Catholic and someone determined to spit in the face of somebody practicing their Lenten religion with a filet-o-fish meal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
I felt it incumbent on me to sit here and enjoy the flesh of three different dead animals on one sandwich, none of which came out of the sea.
Yeah, so...
You know what my favorite meal is? I call it a turf and turf. They both came from the dirt.
Turf and turf. Are you a sea fish?
I am not a sea fish. Thank you for asking.
Do you
behold my lack of scales? He's gone now, folks.
Do you?
There's no fins. There are no fins on me.
Do you eat seafood?
As a matter of fact, I totally don't.
Totally don't?
Totally don't.
There is no seafood that you eat?
No.
Do you eat tuna?
No.
Okay. Lobster.
That's still from the sea, so no. Would you like to ask me about some seafood that didn't come out of the sea? Were you about to say clam?
Clam. Clams don't technically come from the sea. They
come
from under
the sea. Well, it's funny
because
you asked me about clams. And the thing about clams is that I don't eat clams.
There's a scene from a movie, and I'm trying to remember what movie it is, but as they're naming things off, they're like... It's from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
When he's saying, I could make any food. And the meteorologist is like, could you make this? And he goes, yeah, that's a food. Again, a food. All right, just think of what you're saying, and if it's a food, yes. Clams don't actually come from the sea. They come technically from under the sea. Clams are dug up from under the ground. So,
well, that just sounds like a very bad idea, because what you're saying is you went underwater in order to dig up something, and all you found was this nasty little piece of filth in a shell. And you went, you know what? Even though it was hard to get to you, you must be worth eating.
It basically looks like a penis.
No. That's a gooey duck.
A what?
A gooey duck. Okay, I'm going to show him a gooey duck, people.
All right.
Go Google this. And when I show him a gooey duck... he's going to understand what really looks like a penis.
I know what penises look like.
Do you know what a gooey duck looks like?
I don't know what a gooey duck looks like.
Okay.
I know what a sea cucumber looks like and what it does when you agitate it.
So,
He's looking at this, the thing that drives me crazy about Laird is a combination of two things. One... that he knows a lot of things that does look like a penis. That he knows a lot of things, and actually that's one of the things I love the most about Laird, because we can carry on a conversation about just about any topic, and you can get into it. But most of those things, I'm going to say the vast majority, especially from a pop culture perspective, are things that you insist... upon having an opinion on, having never personally experienced it.
Sure.
The thing I was going to say about Limitless is the thing that is actually interesting about Limitless is this sort of way that he calculates things, and he learns all these things, and he figures them all out, and he knows what's going to happen based on knowing, you know, all of the data that's coming in. I feel like that's kind of like you, but without the need for any particular drug. That you sort of bring in all this stuff and then, you know, sort of roll with what the outcome is. But I think that lacks and takes away from the idea of the actual personal experience.
I'm just saying I didn't need to personally experience the film Stealth to know that it's not worth my time to do so.
Now, I saw the film Stealth.
Uh-huh.
Because I've seen... My wife once made the comment, just because they make a movie doesn't mean you have to watch it.
Your wife's a wise woman.
She is.
I agree with her wholeheartedly on this point. I suspect this is why you hate
doctor.
Me.
A grown-ass doctor,
that's
sorry.
That's the one.
Aren't
you glad she'll never listen to this?
Yes, I am. I saw the movie Stealth, and in addition to it not being a particularly good film... It's a particularly bad film.
I know.
It
you know
has...
how I know? Because I didn't watch the movie.
Right, but But there has to have been a movie that has existed on the planet or something. Whether it's a song or a movie or a book or something that you were told, this is not good, and you saw it and you went, you're wrong.
Now, what is the value of not good in this context? Because, I mean, I've seen excerpts from The Room, and The Room is advertised as terrible, like unmitigatedly terrible.
True.
But it falls into, like, so bad it's good territory. Similarly, see, there's things that I'm like, I appreciate this for the camp value or the kitsch value because I can come into it knowing it's silly or ridiculous.
You and your cousin have this idea that it's so bad it's good is a possibility. And I have never really agreed with that. I've watched Troll 2. I've watched a number of things that are bad, but I've never watched it and thought this is so bad that it's good. I watch them in a sense with a sense of awe and wonder that this was made, but I'm never like, oh man, it's so funny that they did that thing. It's either funny or it's not, or it's good or it's not. There's no, yeah, I just, you guys like sort of turn back the odometer on Ferris Bueller's car and sort of go, oh, well now we're at this point, and I just can't go through that same process.
No, that's fair.
Well, that was a good dispute on that particular instance.
Well, what do you want me to say? You want me to try and convince you that So Bad It's Good is a thing? You're talking about how you approach these things with a sense of awe and wonder, and they come out of a place that I understand in the sense of, yeah, you do kind of want to know how on earth this many people, because it is this many people, there is a large number of people involved, got together and put this out.
Right.
No, it's like me looking at the collective filmography of Don Bluth, late of Disney and then later of his own incompetent semi-company after that, and saying, who kept giving him money to keep doing this? Because occasionally they didn't suck as hard, but then they turned around and sucked more. And it's not like Don Bluth and his animation team were the only people involved in this. You look at the vocal talent, you look at the musical talent. Like, this man had a professional relationship over the course of multiple films with Barry Manilow. And you're like, hold on now. Didn't Barry Manilow have better things to do with his time, or at the very least, a higher asking price than Don Bluth could afford to pay?
Right. But the thing that's interesting is this, is what you've sort of suggested is the value of my personal opinion and experience in all this. And what I'm suggesting is that I think you miss out on that in a lot of cases where you judge those books so eloquently by their covers.
It's a really useful skill. You should pick it up.
I can't.
You watch stealth, my friend. You watch stealth.
I watch all the movies that come out. Will you turn off a movie that you're watching? Like, will you actually not finish a movie if it's...
Oh, absolutely.
Does this happen a lot for you, or is this just like a few?
Often enough. I mean, it's not as common with movies, because a movie I'm kind of like, well, if I've picked this up, I picked it up because I want one of a number of things. Either I actually want to see the movie itself, it has a compelling premise and I want to get to the end, or I want something that I'm basically going to shut my brain off and ignore and just kind of...
Sure.
Like, if it's a comedy, I'm kind of like, okay, this is going to entertain me in this fashion. So it's not hugely often in the grand scheme of things. It's much more common for like a TV series. Like a TV series, when it starts to burn itself out,
you get a couple episodes in, you go, look, yeah, I'm not.
There's a point where I will go and I'll look it up and I'll come back and I'll be like, okay, so now that I know where it's going, would it be worth seeing how it gets there?
See, I know this show's called Mostly Spoilers, but you literally spoil things for yourself.
No, but the thing is,
if you would enjoy
only in the circumstance where we've talked about this, only in the circumstance where the line is, if I didn't do this, would I ever come back to it? Your take on a thing is, if I walk away from it, there's no re-engagement. It's a clean break and I'm done. Mine is, I might come back if I find out that they brought it back. Even though I won't have the same experience as somebody who stuck it out and saw the whole thing,
right.
I also would never have gotten to that point unless I had done this.
Unless
this was a necessary step for me to engage with this medium.
Okay.
And I mean, part of that is the fact that I remember, like, tuning into serialized shows on networks. And
right.
And this was during a time where, you know, if you want to watch it from the beginning, well, wait until they loop it again.
Yeah.
So, like, my early engagement with Star Trek The Next Generation, the first episode of that I remember seeing turns out to be from their final season.
Right.
My first memory of that show is Data having his head split open while he's amnesiac in Village.
Yep.
Like, that is my first recollection of that. My first recollection of Voyager is finding out the Doctor's a hologram. Right. So,
well, and this is, like, someone, I was saying the other day to someone that I went through and watched all of X-Files.
Yeah.
And they were like, you didn't watch that in the first place? I was like, well, no, when it came out, you had to just be there at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday on Fox. Like, there was no other way to do that. So I think that we're probably changing the way that we do. I mean, I know we're changing the way we do view things based on the way we can actually consume content now.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one, I think what's changing is from a critical review standpoint, no one was ever ahead of you in a show.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't a thing that happened.
Yeah,
like,
you're there.
You're there. We were all there on Wednesday, or we weren't, and we're not going to see. Like, that's the crazy thing, is that when X-Files was on the air, if you didn't see an episode when it came out, you just couldn't.
Yeah.
You just literally, people would say, did you see that episode? You'd be like, no.
Yeah.
And then you'd be like, I'm not going to see that. Or maybe I will, but it's never going to be in the same
sort of vein. I mean, that's a tough show because, like, if you miss out on part of the whole Black Oil Bees myth arc, I've never seen that show, by the way.
I can't.
Did that just to troll them. It's true, but I did that just to troll
them. You've actually.
Never.
You've never seen a single episode of The X-Files?
None. Especially not Home, the really terrible one they wouldn't repeat ever again.
That's
a messed up premise.
I watched Home when it came out. It was one of the episodes I happened to see when it came out. And it is,
I just don't know why they did that.
It is one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen on network television.
Mm.
I watched it again recently.
Okay.
Not super recently, but over the last few years I decided to go back, started season one and work my way through. There's huge chunks of X-Files that I missed out on. And just had no idea what they were doing. And I got to that episode, and I thought, well, I'm a grown man now. So obviously I'll be better at handling that episode. Turns out, no. Turns out, I think as a teenager, I might have even blocked out stuff or didn't watch parts of it.
It's a pretty messed up premise.
Because it's so disturbing.
Which I know because I haven't watched it.
Right.
Yes. But anyway, like, I'm saying that, you know, I will easily break off my relationship with things. Like, the other night I was watching Edge of Tomorrow.
Right.
And when it got bad, I was just like, I feel like I know where this is going, and it's kind of late, and I just, it's very dark and grainy, and it's getting into some very generic action sequences. I'm just going to go look up what happens and see if it goes anywhere remotely interesting, and it doesn't.
It does not.
No. So I was glad I did that, and I'm often glad I do that. Similarly, I'm glad I look up, like, because I will go out on a limb and, well, here's one. Okay, so I'll go and I'll talk.
Well, I was going to say, I have only turned off two movies in my entire life where I've literally stopped watching them and said, no, I'm not going to watch that movie, and I'm done with it. The first was Existence.
Well, that's a bad movie.
It is a pretty awful movie.
Yeah.
And I got about halfway through, and I turned it off. The other was Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Why were you watching Don't Mess with the Zohan? Its title is literally, please don't watch this
please
film.
Don't watch the film.
You messed with the Zohan.
I have a complicated relationship with Adam Sandler.
Apparently, because you're watching his movies.
Well, I was of the right age at the right time to really love Sandler. Because when I was in high school, was peak Sandler. And when I say peak Sandler, I mean, you know, he's finishing up SNL, he's doing Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison, The Waterboy.
Yep.
He has, at that point, yet to make a fundamentally flawed movie. Like, he hasn't made a Jack and Jill or a...
He hasn't made a good movie yet, mind you.
Anyways, so for me, you know, as a teenager, as a 15-year-old, Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore are the funniest movies I could possibly imagine. I watched Happy Gilmore over and over again. I still really enjoy it. I still think it's great. Mm-hmm. But over the years, as time went on, he started making worse and worse movies.
Yep.
And I continued to watch them. He then actually branched out in a little bit of dramatic acting and made a few really fantastic movies.
And the thing is, if I can just interject here, I remember very clearly, it might have been Roger Ebert's review, it was somebody's review, it might have been Ebert's review of Anger Management, which was talking about how much better of a film it would have been if it was a Jack Nicholson film where Sandler was the hired talent. Like, you brought him in to pad out the film.
Yeah.
As opposed to the reverse. Because, of course, it was the reverse. You know, you brought in Jack Nicholson to pad out a Sandler film.
Yeah.
And I find that when Sandler is not in a Sandler film, you get a big step up. Spanglish is really entertaining. Yeah. Rain Over Me, I haven't seen, but I actually do want to see. Because his
performance in Rain Over Me is... it's stunning. He's almost... He would be unrecognizable if he weren't so recognizable.
Yeah. I understand that Punch Drunk Love was good, actually, and that was his first, I think.
Punch Drunk Love was the first time... Punch Drunk Love was the first movie where I watched it, and I was expecting a Sandler movie.
Yeah.
And I always say to people, I love that you put it that way, because I will always say to people, like, oh, it's not a Sandler movie, or it is a Sandler movie. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what do you mean? It's a movie with Adam Sandler. And I'm like, no, no, no. Those are two very different things. A Sandler movie is Jack and Jill. It's Pixels. It's Billy Madison. It's those things. Spanglish is not a Sandler movie.
No.
It is a movie that happens to have Adam Sandler in it.
Yeah.
And those are two very separate things.
And I find, I mean, like, obviously there's certain shared traits in Adam Sandler movies. Like, you get, of course, he's often going to be working with one of his friends or one or more of his friends.
Yeah.
He brings who the themselves whole crew, are going to be usually. Doing, like, the degenerate, most degenerate version of themselves. He'll often bring the whole crew to some exotic location because he got the money to do it.
Yeah.
There's often a hot lady involved because, hey, why not?
I like the fact that he has this crew of people that he just brings with him on all his movies.
And the thing is, I find that I think the perfect balance was struck with Hotel Transylvania. Because Hotel Transylvania is and is not a Sandler movie.
Right.
Here he is beholden to an animation studio that has certain guidelines on what the content can be.
Yep.
But it's also a style of humor that is very... It's familiar to him, and the crew that comes along, you have David Spade, you have Kevin James that come along, and they bring a lot to their parts as well.
The really interesting thing I will say about that is I absolutely agree that Hotel Transylvania is like a very, it very runs that edge between a Sandler movie and a not Sandler movie, and I have not seen it.
You haven't seen Hotel Transylvania.
But I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I've seen a little bit of Hotel Transylvania. We've watched a little bit of it at home.
I was surprised. I mean, I'm watching it as an adult. Like, I'm just I'm just like, I just want to see this because it keeps cropping up and I'm bored and I need something to fill the time. Yep. And I was very much surprised by how much I enjoyed it.
Well, it opens very in a very amusing way. Like, I will say when they go to the town at the very beginning, they go to the village and light it on fire and go back. That's a very funny scene.
Yeah.
Like, it has legitimate humor in it. So to get back to the Don't Mess with the Zohan thing, why I would possibly do that, is that Don't Mess with the Zohan was, in my mind, the first this is not okay movie that he made. It was the first movie, because it predates a lot of those other ones that he made that were really,
sure,
really terrible.
Sure, but still.
And it was
you
the first
tell.
Time. Oh, it was awful. It
no,
was
but I mean,
it
you
was...
could tell before going to watch it. You could see.
Well, I didn't go to watch it. It was a rental.
Fine. So you went and rented it.
I think Emily might have rented it. Because Emily is also a huge Adam Sandler fan.
Well, we're going to have words.
A very big Adam Sandler fan. And so I believe her and I and Sarah actually were watching it. And there comes a scene towards the end of the movie. The worst part about that, worse than we turned off that movie, is how late into that movie we turned off that movie. But there just came a point where we just went, we can't physically watch this. There's no, we cannot finish this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't tend to turn stuff off. TV shows, I'll give it a try. The thing that frustrates me is that I do think I have a different feeling about a lot of TV shows than a lot of critics and a lot of people. And so there's shows I desperately want to watch, and I do not like them.
Yeah.
Like, I have now tried over and over again to watch Peaky Blinders.
Yeah,
and I've been told it's so good, and it's so fantastic, and I see it.
Yeah.
I do absolutely see. There's some very good actors in it. I have no interest. That show.
It was one of the top things that I kept coming back to and going, I feel like this is a thing I could get into, and then it did not work. I'm sure it's a fine show.
It's got an amazing cast.
Yeah, and I mean, it's
literally
been running
for
quite
cast.
A while, and I'm given to understand that it does some very good things with the cast. Yeah. But, you know, there's a number of shows that fulfill those criteria, and I go, that's, you know, like, I'm really happy that you people are enjoying it, and I would actually put it on a list of things that if I knew somebody who liked the qualities of that show, I would be recommending. I'd say, like, I've heard a lot of things about this. I would suggest you give this a try, but I'm not going to watch
it. And there's a few shows like that. Like, I heard people kind of go on and on about how much they liked Hell on Wheels.
Not familiar.
Hell on Wheels is, I guess, an AMC show.
Okay.
It was one of the, it was sort of their maybe fourth big show they put out.
Okay.
So they have Mad Men, obviously. They got The Walking Dead.
Yep.
Maybe third. Anyways, it's a show about a post-Civil War guy who basically is taking his revenge on the people who did bad things to him and his family during the Civil War.
Okay.
It looks really good, as AMC movies or AMC shows tend to do. Mm. It's filmed really well, and it should be really good. And I don't know if I've ever connected with a character less than I connect with the main character. And there's people in it that I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
Common is in it, who I love. And there's just there's great people in it, and I have just no interest in seeing it.
Now, I was thinking, I've taken the entire span of time to think.
Okay.
About a film that I chose to see that had a poor critical reception. And in fairness, I have to stipulate that one of the critics I tended to go to a lot was Roger Ebert.
Okay.
And Roger Ebert gave this a much better review than most other critics.
Okay.
Nonetheless, I was not motivated to see it by Ebert's review. The film that I went to see was The Golden Compass.
Wow. Carry on.
Now, I went to see The Golden Compass because I really like the book.
I've heard nothing but great things about
the book. The book is fantastic.
That's what I hear.
The thing about the movie is that
it's so bad.
The thing is this. It was challenged from the outset. I don't think the director who was behind it, I don't think the producer who was behind it, I don't think those people were the people to do this particular film. Nonetheless,
I certainly don't think they were the people to do the film. Having
nonetheless, New Line, you know, had at that point the Lord of the Rings film under their belt. That was fine, you know. Like, you're like, okay, they can do that. And I think the cast was good. Like, Daniel Craig, Nicole Kidman was perfectly cast. The point the author actually came back and said, no, that's how I picture her now. Okay. Like the fans were on about her hair's the wrong color, and Philip Pullman actually came back and was like, nope, that's fine. That's perfect. Yep. Daniel Craig was in it. Daniel Craig was great. Yeah. Dakota Blue Richards, I believe, was the lead actress. And she was good. Like she had the character for it. I don't think she was the optimal actress at that time. Maybe like I feel like you could have gotten somebody with a little bit more push. But anyway, a series of decisions were made on that. So for example, they brought in Ian McKellen to voice a giant polar bear, and I'm like, you didn't originally have him cast. You replaced somebody else with Ian McKellen because you're like, I wanted a bigger name in this role.
Right.
And then they had the issue where there was a huge uprising against the film from evangelical Christians in the States.
Yep.
And they made the decision to tweak the film so that it wouldn't contain the same degree of anti-churchish messages as the book. And the problem is, you can't please those people. They made the tweaks, and those people still said, we're boycotting the movie.
Right.
So there was no point in doing this.
Yeah, and the tweaks made the film a significantly worse film.
But the worst thing
for everyone,
the worst thing of all, because you can go back and watch the original trailers.
Mm-hmm.
There are scenes in the trailers which are from the ending of the novel.
Okay.
And if they had left them in, I'm not saying the film would have become great, but it would have stepped up the film significantly, because it would have made it a more daring film, and it would have had the kind of conclusion you don't often see in children's films. Those scenes were not only filmed, but you can see the special effects were done for them. Like, that ending was done.
It was done.
And they cut it.
Yeah.
They cut the whole ending of the novel, which means if they had actually gotten to go ahead and film the second film, they would have had to put the ending of the first novel at the start of the second film, and it would have been a very jarring experience.
Right.
The ending of The Golden Compass is not an easy thing to commit to film, and I can see why they would have been leery of it, but you have to know when you're adapting that book that this is going to happen.
Yep.
And that what happens in the second book, if you want to do the second film, is going to happen. Like, you have to read that series.
Right.
It's not The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where you're like, this is going to be easy to rein in as a generic adventure. We don't need to worry too much about what's going on. It's a lot more difficult. Now,
right.
So I watched the trailers, and I was like, the trailers have got me sufficiently excited. The critics are ragging about it, but I really like the book, and I would like to hope that they committed the things to the book, and what's got the critics down is that they're challenged by the material or that it's not a very traditional film. So I watched the film. I went to theaters and watched the film. I bought a DVD copy of the film.
After having watched
it? Yeah, after having watched the film. After having watched... I was hoping that...
That they'd put a different movie on the DVD?
No, I was hoping... I deserved that. He's having fun.
They gave me the right DVD. It's got a whole different movie.
He's having
Point
lots
Break.
Of fun. He's never had this much victory over me before.
Yeah,
it's great. This is exactly why you wanted this to happen.
Well, you know, I mean...
I was hoping that, you know, a strong showing in ticket sales, strong showing in DVDs. I was hoping we'd get the second movie and that they'd be forced to roll ahead and to quit the pandering and do a more challenging film. Because I would have liked to see that. Obviously, that did not come to pass.
Right.
Which is unfortunate in my mind. But at the same time, given how badly they handled the first one, it just, what it comes down to is I know they actually had the components for a better movie there and actively turned away from doing it at a number of opportunities. And that's what kind of rankles me.
Okay.
Like, it was there to be better, and they had at one point an even marginally better film, and deliberately cut it to be worse in the hope that they'd get a bigger audience, which they didn't.
So your hope...
But I went to see that film on the basis of I like the book. And in open defiance of reading critics' reviews that said it was bad. I was like, I'm sure I'll enjoy this anyway because I like the book.
And you enjoyed it enough that you bought a DVD copy of a bad film.
Yep. In fairness, I have DVDs of other bad films. Mind you, usually not ones I'd seen beforehand, but ones right. that I had hoped would be good.
I
owned two DVDs of Legend because apparently they felt like they needed to give you two copies of the film in one DVD case. So I have two copies of Legend, and okay. I don't want to watch either of them ever.
Have you ever seen Legend?
I've seen just enough of it to know that it's a terrible film.
It is not good.
No, it's bad.
I have seen it.
Yeah.
And it is significantly bad.
Yeah, it's not good.
The
problem with that one is people tell me it's good, right? So I was like, well, I mean, it's here, it's cheap, this is in my before I became more judgmental phase. Yep. You can thank Legend for this. This is really where we're at here.
Okay.
So Tom Cruise, Mia Sara, and Tim Curry.
Tim Curry.
You know what? You've all been in better things. You've all been in better things. And Tim Curry as Satan, that should have been a winning proposition, but...
It really is kind of amazing that it didn't work. Because I feel like...
It didn't work really hard.
I mean, have you seen Willow?
Yeah.
Do you like Willow? I can't even describe to you his face. He just looked like David Harbour having a heart attack. Did you like Willow? Just answer that. It's an easy question.
It's not.
It is an easy question.
No, it isn't.
Did you like Willow?
I don't want to talk about it.
I know, and I know what your answer is going to be.
What is my answer?
Did you like Willow?
What's my answer?
Yes, you did like Willow. Everybody liked Willow.
No.
Critics said they didn't like Willow. They were lying.
They weren't
Everyone
lying.
Liked Willow.
Willow.
Did you like Willow?
Oh, occasionally.
Answer the question. No, there's no occasionally. Did you like Willow?
No, I did not like Willow. That it's a garbage fire of a film. It's okay. All bad. All
right. Now, having said that...
If you're making it yes or no, I'm saying no. If I'm allowed really? To go middle ground, I will say occasionally.
How could you say that about
it's
Willow?
It's not a good film.
No, it's not, but it's great.
No, it's not that either.
No, it really is. It has... A really surprisingly full cast.
That's so bad.
Some really exceptional. My actual favorite thing in it is Kevin.
It has Gene Marsh going Snow Leopard style in the air in the middle of a friggin' rainstorm.
Yeah, it's great.
And his excuse for casting magic spells.
What's the guy's name? What's the guy?
Val Kilmer.
No.
Fine.
Kevin
Sorbo.
No, not
James.
Kevin Sorbo.
Flash. Elmo was in the film. Kevin Clash.
Usual Suspects.
Kevin Pollak? Is it Kevin Pollak?
Kevin Pollak. Kevin Pollak plays one of the sprites or brownies or whatever it is.
Does he really?
Yes, he does.
Yeah,
how
about that?
And actually, he's one of my favorite things in it. But the thing is that there were a series of movies being made around the time of Legend that basically Hollywood was like, all right. Let's make fantasy movies.
Incidentally, you don't know this.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
It was actually, I think it was Chris Claremont of the X-Files fame.
Okay.
And I will confirm this.
Chris Claremont or Chris, the main Chris Carter?
It was one Chris Claremont.
Okay.
So it's Chris Claremont who it was. Chris Claremont and, he's not X-Files, he's X-Men. That was my confusion.
Okay, yeah.
But Chris Claremont, who was a writer on X-Men, and George Lucas put together a novel trilogy as a sequel to Willow. And for whatever reason, they weren't allowed to invoke a lot of the names involved in Willow to the point that they basically started the first novel by renaming Willow.
Okay.
Yeah, they're like, we're not going to call you Willow anymore. We're going to give you a different name, and that's your name now.
Okay.
But anyway, it was a sequel series to the film, and the world they created out of it was so bad. It was unreasonably bizarre and awful, and included like time travel and.
I'm fine with that.
No, you wouldn't be. I own all three of them.
Of course you do.
I bought them as a trilogy, and I own all three of them. I've read them all.
Bought them as a trilogy. When you bought them as a trilogy,
that was a mistake.
Were you were you aware of their reputation?
I at the time I didn't know they had a reputation. I was like, oh, this is a continuation of the film Willow, which I saw once when I was a kid, and I remembered everybody getting turned into pigs, and that was fun, and. And
you liked it.
Warwick Davis is in that film. Warwick Davis is great. I wish he'd been given more to do. I wish George Lucas hadn't dropped the ball that hard with that film.
Second best actor of his kind?
Ilk. Brit? British person?
Yes, British, second best.
Child
British,
star?
Second best British actor of all time, Warwick Davis.
Not by me.
No, I only say this because I don't know what the currently socially acceptable term for a person of small stature is.
That's valid.
Little person? Is that what we're...
I don't
is
know.
That, anyways, he's probably my second favorite little person actor of all time. Second only to Peter Dinklage.
Well, I mean, Peter Dinklage, just, my God, that man.
Well, Dinklage is in a whole bunch of movies I really like. My favorite thing about Peter Dinklage is two movies that he made, which are, one is a remake of the other. They are very different movies, and he plays the same character in these two films.
Oh, I know this.
You should know this.
Yeah, it's Elf and Days of Future Past.
It is Elf and Days of Future Past. Also, the real ones that we're talking here are the two versions of The Funeral.
I've not seen that film.
The Funeral is a British film.
I'm sure.
About a family dealing with comedy. The funeral of the patriarch of the family.
It's a comedy.
It is a comedy. It is,
see, because it's
quite
a British
funny.
Film called The Funeral, so
it
it's a
has
comedy.
Pirate Steve from Dodgeball.
Okay. I've never seen that film because it's a bad film.
Oh, love of God. it also... So, anyways, they made this movie. It's a British movie.
You love God. I'm going to love very, chicken on beef on Fridays.
and so the... It's a British movie. It's quite funny. And Peter Dinklage plays this particular character. He then reprises his role in the Chris Rock-led... all black cast remake of that British film.
Why not?
Both movies are quite funny, and Dinklage is amazing in both movies. I won't give away the spoiler, but he is the highlight of two very, very good movies.
He basically has. He's fantastic.
He really is.
Yeah.
So I just can't believe the number of things during this podcast about things you like and things you don't like that you literally have not experienced.
Oh yeah, it's huge. it's just massive.
I'm sorry. So do you have a set? We're going to close this out soon because this is a longer episode for us. But do you have particular critics you always listen to?
No.
Or are you now like, what's the Rotten Tomatoes score? What's the IMDb?
I mean, I'll gauge those sometimes, but at the same time, like, I went to see The Last Jedi despite the fact the Rotten Tomatoes score was in this tank. I assume that was troll. I still think, to a significant extent, the Rotten Tomatoes score was deliberately tanked.
I still think it was.
Yeah, I'm quite certain of that.
I think that there are certainly... I understand people's criticism of the movie. I really enjoyed it. I also 100% enjoy people's criticism. That ranking is
no,
ridiculous.
it's quite, yeah, that it's fake. But I mean, this is my point. Like, I don't like what you believe I do. I don't do. It's not about the critical rankings for me. It's just a simple breakdown of, you know, give me the gist of the movie, and I can pretty much tell you whether or not this is going to be good or bad. Like, one of the first movies that a movie that I very clearly remember looking to see how it was going to come out, and making a very quick snap decision about, which I feel completely vindicated on, Maleficent.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping Disney was going to deliver on that in a really good way, and when I found out like what it was, I went to my IRC channel and I was like, so. Anybody who doesn't want Maleficent spoilers, get out now, because otherwise I'm going to tell you exactly how a bad movie goes, so you don't go spend money to see it.
I have seen Maleficent twice.
That was two times too many. That was three times too many.
I don't know how that works, but...
Very carefully.
the thing about Maleficent is that
it's a bad movie.
Should be
good. Different movie.
It should be a different movie.
It should be stopped from production. It should be wiped from the face.
But it should... There are times when you just want a movie to be good just because you really want it to be good.
It should have been a much better movie.
The thing that I think is really interesting is that in the generation that we're living in, and that I have sort of straddled this generation, and that I am both pre-internet and post-internet.
Sure.
Stop
straddling that generation, man.
I wish that more people had the ability to experience things without a critical lens having already been applied to it.
And that's what I'm saying, is that I often do, but my decision is based on a certain amount of understanding going out of what it is. And it's very rare that I go in completely blind on a movie because, I mean, you do have, if not trailers, at least you have what used to be called the high concept.
Right.
And I miss the high concept movie. I was watching, I was watching Edge of Tomorrow, for one thing. And that, you know, that's a high concept movie, because that'd be a premise. Anyway, I don't follow the critics. I glean enough information that I basically determine whether or not it's worth my time to experience, or whether in the course of collecting more information, I will eventually find out enough to go, I'm done.
I'm good.
And this is why I know so much about movies I haven't seen, because it gets to a point where I'm like, the only way this could possibly sell me, and this goes back to the TV thing, is if I read ahead and found out there was something worth my time to go back and watch, and I generally don't. And that's where I'm going to leave it, because we're...
Sure. Yeah. My last little story that I'll say about this is a very brief story about one of my favorite days I've ever experienced. I was in the Annapolis Valley, and it was Christmas Day. On Christmas Day, nothing's really open. In the Annapolis Valley, things aren't generally open most of the time anyways. Christmas Day, things are very particularly closed. I had done Christmas with my family and was now with two other friends, my friend Kathy and my friend Mike. We were all sort of done with our family for the day and wanted to hang out for a while. So we decided to go to the Big Stop Irving in New Minas. And we thought, here's what we'll do. We'll get some junk food. We'll buy a couple movies because they have movies for sale there at the time. And we'll watch something. So we picked up a movie that, because of the time, this is 2099, 2000-ish, no one was going online to check movie reviews or to even really, if you didn't see a trailer for something at a movie, you probably didn't see a trailer for it. Mm. That wasn't really a thing. So we grabbed a movie that we knew nothing about. It had a funny-looking cover, which we thought looked amusing. And we took this movie home, and we watched it. And that movie was Office Space.
Okay.
So what I'm sad for is that we no longer, because of trailers and the fact that we all see all the trailers all the time on every platform, and because of IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, all these kinds of things, there's not much mystery about most movies as they come out now. You and I were sitting the other day listening to Mark Hamill talk about how nobody knew that Luke was that Darth Vader was his father.
Yeah, your son knows that now. He hasn't seen Star Wars.
My son knows. That's the thing. My son knows this. And when I was telling him the story of Star Wars, because he's a little bit young for it, but I wanted to tell him the story of it and get him excited. When I got to a certain part, he told me that Darth Vader was Luke's father.
Spoilers.
So we're just going to finish this last little part. Laird yelled spoilers at my phone, and my phone shut off our recording.
I'm an evil wizard.
So, but I miss, and I think that I will forever miss, the wonder of not knowing that Don't Mess with the Zohan is a bad movie, or not knowing what Office Space was whatsoever. I think we make some mistakes in those instances where we watch some bad things. But we also discover some things that, you know, the first time I ever watched Lars and the Real Girl, having known nothing about it and realizing, like, oh, my God, this is a really exceptionally good movie. Mm-hmm. Or Office Space or all those kinds of things. I think I'm hard on you about this because it's funny to me. But I wish that people who are younger than me, which is most people, had the chance to experience the wonder of not knowing about something and just experiencing it.
Mm. As for me, I'll take my superpower to not make mistakes and my other superpower to frustrate you any day.
With that, have a wonderful, wonderful evening.